Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, June the 19th, 2009. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk to our panelists. We don't have a guest today. Our panelists in studio are Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. The markets are gearing up for the end-of-the-month acreage report. We'll try to discern just exactly what it's thinking, and that'll happen today on Commodity Week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Why did the commodity markets tank on Friday? Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group.
Well, I think there's a couple things. Start with, I think everybody beginning to feel a little more comfortable with crop prospects.
This warmer weather that we've had this past week here has really kind of dressed up the crop. I think that started to people begin to feel a little more comfortable with that. And I think the last thing was the lymphoma number. Everybody's been kind of biting their fingernails for some kind of an acreage estimate. There's been a lot of whisper in the trade of lower corn, higher bean acres, and I think when the lymphoma numbers came out that direction, it was kind of, you know, one of these things, sell the news type thing.
Pete Manhart?
Well, we'd had seven straight weeks up on beans and needed a break from that, which was several dollars. We backed off a dollar this week. I think it's the first down week in beans and after seven straight up weeks. And I think the weather, the warm and the moisture. Moisture is now looked at as making more grain. And I think also the outside markets haven't really taken it up like they had earlier.
And Bill Mayer.
Well, I think these guys have pretty well covered it. But if you look back over the last couple of weeks, we took the market up on the wet weather and the fact that we weren't getting planted. We went up and met some objectives, some targets that had been in place for quite a while, and we couldn't have enough or didn't have enough bullish news to get through those targets or that resistance. And I think the market came back down, as Dan said, as corn and beans did get planted and rain makes grain, and the perspective as far as how the crops are doing has changed over the last 2 weeks as well.
In fact, the Informa acreage numbers did come out. Informa put the acreage for corn at 83.1 USDA, and we'll round was an 85. If you use 153 yield on corn nationally, that's a 12.5 billion, or that's with a 12.5 billion bushel demand, that is. Carryover would be, well, just under a billion at 980 million bushels. Are you in the Informa range for corn acres at this time at 83.1?
I guess I would not see anything wrong with that number. I think that's fairly close. Probably the big question is there was whatever number you want to use in the March report, 5 million acres at less than last year. Will some of those come back in the Western Belt where they did have some good weather? That may offset some of the loss of acres in the Eastern Belt, But I guess that's as good a number as can be out there right now, and carry out around that 1 billion bushel mark looks to be pretty reasonable at this point.
You agree?
I don't see anything wrong with that. And again, you got to realize the Western Corn Belt has the three of the top four top producers, and they're all well ahead of normal and looking great, and they expect those to make up for the ills in parts of Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio.
The number crunchers in the depths of ADM think that informal was close, or you have another number over there?
Well, one thing that we did pick up out west is one wouldn't naturally think that maybe the Western Corn Belt would add some acres because they had kind of an open spring weather pattern. But the fertilizer prices really never came down for them. So the farmers did not see any kind of break in fertilizer prices. So at least visiting with people in the Western Corn Belt, I think their intentions pretty well stayed the same. So I don't. So when you look at the Infoma number of seeing a decline from USDA's March 1 number, you know, it might be a little steeper decline than what I think what some in the market we're looking at, but it's definitely down in that you know, million to a million and a half decline, I think, is kind of where the trade's at.
Corn futures in Chicago this week at a high of $4.24 3/4 for the week, the low at $3.97 3/4. The settlement price there was 26 1/4 lower for the July contract at $3.99 1/4. December futures at $4.19 1/2 finished 28 1/4 cents lower. Dan Zwicker, if you'd take a look at the tech charts for me and tell me what you believe might be happening in the marketplace. I guess is if you look at it on a weekly, it sounds pretty bad, but if you back the charts out, it doesn't look as bad as the weekly sounds, or am I misreading that?
Well, if you, I start with the monthly chart,
right.
And we did make a new high for the move in the early part of June, and now we're well behind for the month. So we do have a monthly reversal in the making in corn. And unless there's a real bullish report that comes out of USDA for a save, that kind of implies that maybe the underlying supply-demand tables might not be quite as tight as what the market was working back in early June. But so when you initially look at the monthly chart action, you got to be at least negative from that point of view. But then when you back it out and actually get into more of a daily chart pattern, we did go down against the uptrend line drawn off of the December lows here this week. Now, we'll have to see whether or not we penetrate that or if we can kind of bounce off of that next week here as everybody kind of positions for that report. But you can't I don't think we've totally killed the market, but the market is definitely vulnerable for some more bearish technical action.
Downside objectives or upside objectives that you like to talk to producers about?
Really, we already made those on the upside, so now we're worried about did we buy enough puts or did we sell enough grain. And I still think that if we have a good summer, we can see corn back under in the 350 area on the board, and you can see beans, who knows how much lower, a bunch lower.
What do you think, Bill?
Well, I think in the short term, let's look at the December corn. I guess I would say that the April lows are probably in the play here now, and that would be about $3.90 to $4 on the December futures. I think there's good solid support in that area for the near or for the near term here. As far as upside objectives, I think we have to get back over the 4 1/4 on these corn, and then 440 would probably offer some resistance, and then of course back up to the 470 levels that we got up to and tested here a couple weeks ago.
Just glancing here at the daily continuation chart, this would be the lead month chart. If you kind of view this week's sideways congestion as kind of maybe a midpoint, and you swing a move off of that 450 high that we made on the lead chart, you chart people probably could get as bearish as 556, 557 or so on the front month contract. That would probably be the July contract. Looking at it on the December contract,
You gave me a wrong number. Read the number again. As bearish as?
356.
Thank you. You said 556.
Oh, 556. Okay.
That'd be kind of bullish.
Hopefully 550 is still in play, but at least in the near term here it's not. But then if you'd use the same technique on Dease corn, you could probably get as bearish as 375. We need to penetrate the trend lines before you start getting real bearish, and we'll have to see where we're at as we go in next week.
So as bearish as, but that's bearish, and the number is not particularly sounding very good, I suppose, to producers, but it is within, I think, the range of what USDA has been talking about for quite some time. So producers probably should have been considering, you know, 390 to 370 as the bottom end, and what, 470 is kind of the top end of the marketplace at this point. And so 450 and above was a good place to start marketing. And I want to get back to a question about old crop in this marketing scenario. Do you believe that producers have gotten rid of all of the old crop that they really want or need to, and can manage to store the old crop into the new crop at this point? You're shaking your head no.
I think they've got more stored than they need to have stored. I think they didn't sell it when it got up there because they had hopes it would go another 50 cents. And I think that as a result of that, they have a lot of corn to unload this summer.
Anybody disagree with that? Everybody agree that they have a lot of corn in storage still, is that right?
I think it's somewhat regional, though. I think that as we saw the Western Belt get planted faster, you did see the bases widen out in some of those areas, and where the eastern bases actually was strengthening a little bit at the same time in the southeast market. And I think that there's probably a greater percentage of the corn owned in the eastern belt than in the western belt right now.
Well, I wonder about that then, too. So if you're in the eastern corn belt and you're looking at a crop that's late in the ground, probably not as good, certainly, as has been in past years, but you never know because we've had a lot of rain and June looks awfully good so far. How do you deal with that differently from one side of the Mississippi to the other? And I guess I'm thinking that if you're in the Western Corn Belt, you've got a lot of corn and you may need to get rid of it. In the Eastern Corn Belt, can you manage to hang on and store it?
Well, one thing that we got ourselves into here in the Eastern Corn Belt, and I think also probably in the Western Corn Belt, this 1.6 billion bushel that we're carrying over, a lot of that is owned by farmers, and the logistics now is not going to really let us clear the market or clean out the bins in time, even though things are late here in the Eastern Corn Belt. So there is a problem here in front of us as we, you know, finish this marketing year and move into the new marketing year. But again, this new crop's not made yet. And, you know, if you look at your planting dates here in the Eastern Corn Belt, it kind of looks like we're going to be in the pollination season all the way into mid-August, maybe, on some of this corn. So we've got a lot of weather in front of us here before this crop is really made.
Well, I guess the question is, how are you dealing with producers east of the Mississippi as opposed to west of the Mississippi, and what they should be doing with both old crop that they might have in storage yet to sell and new crop that they haven't priced at this time? And maybe we can finish up and go across the board with everybody. Dan, you want to start?
Well, I would think that, you know, depending upon their situation, but they're going to have to move it out. I mean, my guess is most farmers don't have enough storage on farm to store everything, and they would be preferable to store it on farm. So there's going to be a strong tendency for them to move the remaining old crop inventories. And I think if they're in that situation, they need to use price rallies to get that job done. Hopefully this market might want to hold above this trend line here next week. We could maybe get a rally going into the report, because if USDA confirms in FOMA number, that really maps out a fairly tight balance sheet for down the road. So that should provide some underlying support to corn.
Okay, so let's deal with that. Price rallies and you move old corn?
Price rallies, you move old corn. You also look at bear put spreads, or you just sell it all and buy calls.
I'm not sure that you deal differently in the different areas, but I think that you have to look at the basin side of it too. And I think if you don't want to price the corn now and wait for some rallies, you probably ought to look at locking in that basis, maybe allowing yourself to get the cash grain moved, at least get it moved into the marketplace.
And then on new crop, and we'll start with you, Bill.
On new crop, I guess right now my feeling is, and each individual is going to be different in what they've done up to this point, but if you've been fairly aggressive and made some decent sales as you went along here over the last 12 months, I think now is the time to kind of stand aside at this point.
Bill Mayer and then Pete Manhart on new crop.
Yeah, if you've sold a big percentage of your new crop, I'd be sitting. If you haven't sold any, I would be looking at puts underneath it and from that end.
And Dan Zwicker.
Well, at this point, you know, you're if you got good crop insurance underneath you, you're kind of somewhat protected with December corn down here again this $4 range. I guess I would probably be a little patient on corn because of that, and see if I could get a little better rally, better pricing opportunities what the market's offering right now.
You're listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. A frontal system oscillating north and south through Illinois this week was responsible for more heavy rain and severe weather across Illinois. Most of the rain the first half of the week was across central and southern Illinois, although on Tuesday, an upper-level disturbance produced thunderstorms over northeastern Illinois, which dropped up to 4 inches of rain on western Will County. A line of severe storms on Thursday morning brought heavy rain to central Illinois as it moved southeast. A station in DeWitt County measured almost 2.5 inches of rain in just 30 minutes on Thursday morning. At mid-month, rainfall is much above normal across the southern half of Illinois and in northeastern Illinois. Temperatures this week were 1 to 3 degrees below normal across the northern half of the state and near to slightly above normal in the south, despite the late week warm-up. An upper-level high-pressure ridge over the central Gulf Coast will be responsible for a period of warm and humid summer weather across Illinois and much of the Midwest next week. It appears that the hottest weather will remain west of Illinois as the axis of the ridge retreats into the central and southern plains. The first half of the week should be mostly dry, although by midweek, waves of energy coming over the top of the ridge could trigger scattered thunderstorms, especially in northern Illinois. Rain chances should increase across central and southern Illinois by the end of the week as a weak cold front pushes south through the state. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilbert.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It's a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. This is the June 19th edition. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today are Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing out of Champaign, Illinois, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Let's go through some of the rest of the numbers as they finished up in Chicago this week. We've managed to put the corn in for you. Remember, July corn was down 26 and a quarter at 399 and a quarter. December futures were at 419 and a half as they settled the week out, down 28 and a quarter. Wheat futures were lower, with a high this week in the July at $5.87 and a quarter. This is the high and the low for the week, overnight and day trade. Low at 5.52, settlement price at 5.55 and a quarter, 29 and a half cents lower. And the July 2010 contract at $6.47 and a half finished down 28 and a quarter. July oats at 2.12 were down 26 and a half cents. Soy complex now. July beans, $12.54 and a half cents, the high, the low at 11.75 and a half. A settlement price at 66 and a half cents lower to finish at $11.79. And November beans finished 70 and a half cents lower this week. The November at $10.06. on their settlement for the week. The Informa numbers were released, and they came out at 78.9 million acres as their guesstimate for the USDA's planted acreage figure that will be released at the end of the month. USDA is currently at 76 million acres at a 42.5 bushel yield, and a 3.05 billion bushel demand carryover there would be 345 million bushels. And that is a big number for the soybeans, isn't it, Dan Zwicker?
It is, but we don't have the crop raised yet. And as in corn, we have some beans that's just coming out of the ground or just actually getting planted over the next few days. So, again, I think using a high-end yield on soybeans might be a little hard to attain when you look at it in a longer term. So we got a long ways to go to raise the crop, but definitely the a larger acreage is definitely going to, you know, add some more beans. But South America is not going to be a big player in the export market until they raise a crop, and they're not going to have new inventories until you, you know, get in next spring. So I do think there's some good demand in this bean complex as well as corn.
What do you think the acreage figure might be on June 30th?
I think this number is fairly good. I think we should bring up that in some areas where they're getting rain this week, and the southern Illinois, southern Indiana, maybe other parts, they won't even plant beans this year. They're just going to take their crop insurance. So that's something maybe they haven't considered yet. But I don't think those numbers look bad.
And would you agree that, you know, we were at 76, and a 78.9 is the guesstimate from Informa, acreage numbers yet to come out from USDA. You've got an idea that you want to work with and talk about maybe the prevented planting and how farmers might be using that. I know Strategic Farm Marketing deals a lot with the crop insurance.
Yeah, and we were seeing some prevented planting inquiries coming from the southern, southwestern part of the state this week. Seemed like it picked up after the Wednesday rains especially, but I guess I would think that 79 million would be probably on the top end. That's what I'd like to think, but I do get nervous again about some of these acres that were planted last year that aren't planted this year on the March report. To me the hard part is on soybeans, that a million acres one way or the other is 50% of your current carryout this year, so it's a big deal. And you know, whether they get it right, since the survey was taken the first week of June, that's probably the next question one's got to expect is going to change between the June 30th report and October, probably.
So you're willing to dismiss the June 30th report in general, I take it?
Well, that's the one we're going to use between the June 30th report and the August report, but I think that 200 to 250 million carryout is a fairly accurate number at this point, as good as we can come up with.
I kind of worry, like Bill, about all those acres from the last report from USDA. I think it was 7.2 million acres that we're going to plant to nothing. And a lot of those acres were in the western Corn Belt, where things went in really well. So if they didn't change corn and bean acres, did a million of those acres go into beans that weren't going to go into anything from USDA?
I think from a practical point of view, there was only maybe about 4 million acres that weren't really accounted for. Two of the big states that lost acres was Texas and I think like North Dakota. And it appears that North Dakota went ahead and planted a lot of spring wheat. So I don't think we're going to get a big bean number out of their area. And the other state was Texas. And Texas is always in a drought state, and so we're not going to pick up any acres in Texas either. So, you have to be a little worried that we could bump up a million or it wouldn't surprise me that USA finds a million and a half more corn and soybean acres. How that's combined, I don't know, but that wouldn't surprise me.
Your opening comments, Dan, sounded as if you, while you were worried about the market a bit, especially about what happened technically this week, that you feel that fundamentally that soybean still has a lot left in it to manage to the upside?
Well, there's one thing that I guess the way the market is acting, of course, you know, a technician is nothing more than a poor man's way of looking at the market. I mean, you can, technically, the way the market is acting, I think it's telling us, too, that we may want to be on guard for a little higher stocks number, June 1 stocks inventory number than what the market's working. And so there could be a surprise there that we may have a little larger carryover actually working than what USDA's number implied at most recent supply demand. So you always got – and the, a lot of times these June reports can either – can be real killers. If they show more inventory around what the market's looking at, and then if the crop is looking good July 1, I've seen a lot of markets go into meltdown stages for 3 weeks and during July on that.
I was thinking that it was not this one, but the next stocks report that ended up showing that them finding soybeans. Why do you say it might be this one?
Well, remember, this is the they've gone through two, so this will be three quarters of the marketing year. So your error factor keeps getting less and less and less. And they, you know, a lot of times I've seen these reports show more inventory levels and what the market was kind of working.
Bill, tell me how you are talking to producers at this point about their new crop soybean production, if you can talk to them about it at all at this point, and marketing that crop, when they should pull the trigger, when they should just stand by and wait.
Well, I guess we've tried to be pretty aggressive on new crop sales. As you said, when you're sitting there and you can't see when you're going to get in the field to plant next, it's hard to get guys to pull the trigger sometimes. So we did look at doing some, buying some puts, selling some calls, selling some puts below the market, some three-way type strategies there to protect yourself, which took advantage of some of the volatility in the market that we saw on the call options and sold that volatility. I think at the present time, like we talked about on the corn, right now, if you made some marketing decisions and took advantage of the higher prices whenever the opportunity was there and got some $10 plus soybeans sold, I think that you probably can afford to maybe stand aside right now. If you didn't, I think on the soybean side, you still probably have some opportunities possibly before the acreage report to get some stuff done there.
Pete, I've heard you often in the past talk about marketing on whole acres as opposed to bushels per acre. I suspect you still do some of that. What do you think this year is a break-even point on the coming crop for soybeans for a producer?
Price per bushel?
Yeah, it varies. Well, whether it's price per bushel or per acre.
Well, it's it doesn't take near as much as corn, but you still need I would like to have $7 beans or more for my beans to lock in profit. And we've tried to get our guys to have at least half of their beans sold or puts underneath them when we were up in those high areas. And the over $10, we got guys to sell like crazy, and or if they didn't want to sell, buy puts. So what it really takes is an individual thing per, I don't have any loan on my ground and the next guy does and the cash rents and all that. But I would want... I would over $10. I'd be sold out actually, myself.
Dan,
I don't know what the cost of production is, but talking to producers, I know last winter they basically $9 beans. If they weren't going to get a $9 bill out of beans out of the field, they were going to go plant corn. So I mean, you get beans down underneath $9 anymore, and of course it depends what kind of yield it is. So. I don't think there's a whole lot of profit, probably much under $8, even in today's environment.
And that does wrap up this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.